death toll from Israeli genocide in Gaza tops 34,260 as regime's airstrikes and artillery fire continue pounding the besieged territory. The Yemeni army carries out new operations in support of Gaza, targeting two American ships and an Israeli vessel with missiles and drones. And U.S. police attack students holding anti-Israel campus rallies in protest at regime's genocide in Gaza, arresting hundreds of protesters. Our top story, Israel's airstrikes and artillery fire continue pounding various parts of Gaza, killing more civilians more than 200 days into the regime's genocidal campaign. In one of the latest attacks, it hit a home east of the southern city of Rafah, killing five citizens and injuring several others. Regime's fighter jets also attacked a home in the Ashati refugee camp west of Gaza City, killing a mother and her two children and also injuring six others. At least three Palestinians were killed and dozens injured by Israeli bombing of a home in a Nasser neighborhood west of Gaza City. Airstrikes on Ma'an and Al-Mawasi districts of Khan Yunis also left at least two civilians dead and several injured. Regime strikes have killed at least 79 Palestinians and left over 86 injured in the past 24 hours. Death toll from the Israeli genocide in Gaza is now at 34,260 since October 7th, and also over 77,000 people have been injured. Now, the global outcry over Israeli massacre and mass burial of Palestinians at Gaza is now at fever pitch. In the latest development, the European Union has called for an independent probe into the discovery of mass graves at two Gaza hospitals destroyed by the Israeli regime.
We are gravely concerned by the reported discovery of mass graves in Khan Yunis and in Al-Shifa Hospital. This is something that forces us to call for an independent investigation of all the suspicions and all the circumstances, because indeed it creates the impression that there might have been violations of international human rights committed. That's why it's important to have independent investigation and to ensure the accountability.
The UN Rights Office also is demanding a transparent and independent investigation. It's called the development a serious violation of international human rights law and international humanitarian law. In recent days, more than 300 bodies have been recovered from under Al-Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis and Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. Reports say bodies were buried beneath piles of waste and included women and the elderly. Author and journalist Eric Wahlberg says the tide is turning against Israel as regime's Western allies are now questioning and even condemning its conduct and ongoing genocide in Gaza.
It's interesting that it also is having repercussions even throughout the media. Google is now being forced to fire. It fired 20 of its staff who are associated with Israel and its war crimes. And there's strong pressures to break off all its cooperation. A lot of the targeting, the facial recognition, this was facilitated by U.S., by Google and social media. So these issues, and then with the European Union coming out and asking for a special investigation, you can see the tide is really turning against Israel. Before, the EU wouldn't say anything. In the past atrocities, Israel's killed thousands in the past, and very little, not a peep from Europe or from the U.S., but now it's really catching up. So it's a horrible massacre, it's a tragedy, it's a war crime, and let's hope that finally there will be some justice. It's interesting, the EU, he said it's for accountability too, he added that. So it's not just to associate, it's not just to make a scene, but it's to target Israel and to force it to comply.
The Yemeni army says it's carried out fresh operations against American and Israeli vessels in international waters. Country's military spokesperson Yahya Saadi said in a first operation, American commercial ship was hit. with missiles in the Gulf of Aden, where the Yemeni army's drones also targeted an American destroyer and an Israeli vessel in the Indian Ocean during two subsequent operations. Saudi said new operations are conducted in response to airstrikes on the country by the United States and the UK, and also in solidarity with Gazans. He stressed that Yemeni armed forces will continue to prevent navigation by Israeli-linked vessels in the Red and Arabian Seas and the Indian Ocean until the regime stops its genocide in Gaza. Activist and political commentator Hussein Abu-Khaiti says that Israel-related ships are now avoiding the Red and Arabian Seas due to Yemen's operations. And he says that the aggression against Yemen persists by the U.S. and U.K. and Israel's onslaught on Gaza continues, and the country's army may expand operations to include the Persian Gulf and the Mediterranean Sea.
This latest operation, as Mr. Yahya Sarai, the spokesperson of Yemeni army, have said, they have targeted a ship, American-U.S. ship, called Merx Yorktown, and as well Israeli ship called MSC Veracruz in the Indian Ocean, and as well targeting as well a U.S. Destroyer. Some media actually is trying now to play down Yemeni attack, and they say there is a reduction of Yemeni attacks in the Red Sea or in the Gulf of Aden. Of course, there is a reduction because Israeli ship now is avoiding the Red Sea and as well the Gulf of Aden, and as well many American-owned ship is going through Africa. They are avoiding to go through the Red Sea. This means that Yemeni actually, their operation is actually successful, and as well many companies in the UK and in the US, they stopped using US-owned ship. They try now to use Chinese-owned ship or any other ships in Asia. That's why I believe that Yemeni army is now actually having the upper hand, and it's clear message to the United States and UK that their operation against Yemen will not stop Yemeni army from conducting attack against Israeli ship. And I believe that Yemeni army can expand its attack to target Israeli linked ship either in the Persian Gulf and as well in the Mediterranean Sea, and as well they could as well expand their attack if the United States and UK will not stop attacking Yemen. Yemeni army might declare at one day they are not only gonna attack US and UK owned ship, but I believe that at one point they will as well target ship that's heading to any UK port or heading toward any United States port.
Lebanon's southern border continues to witness exchange of heavy fire between Hezbollah resistance movement and the Israeli occupation forces. The movement says it carried out fresh operations against Israeli targets. Hezbollah says its operations are in response to regime's earlier airstrikes that killed and wounded several civilians in a number of Lebanese villages. Mariam Saleh, our Beirut correspondent, joined us earlier with your details.
The latest that we have was basically a massacre in the town of Hanin, which led to the killing of an 11-year-old girl and her aunt, and the wounding of several other civilians that are of the same family, actually, in that same residence. And so Hezbollah made it clear that they will not tolerate this issue. We can see that by the fact that for the first time, Hezbollah has basically launched at least four operations in retaliation of the same attack and the same strike. Before, we've seen, for example, that whenever we see the fall of civilians, Hezbollah would strike Katyusha rockets or would launch Katyusha rockets against the Israeli settlements. Now we have several instances where there were tens of Katyusha rockets that were launched against Margiliot, which is the occupied town of Hunin, also Shumera, and also Ain Zikim, which these are all where we saw that Katyusha rockets were targeted. But Hezbollah also said that they targeted soldiers in Avivim, and that also was in retaliation for the killing of civilians. They mentioned also, they made it clear that the settlement house that they targeted included Israeli soldiers, and scores of Israeli soldiers were either killed or wounded. Hezbollah made clear to mention that in their statement. Also, Hezbollah also mentioned that they targeted soldiers in the settlement or the woods surrounding the post of Natua and the Ruaisat al-Alam post, which is one of the posts that are usually targeted by Hezbollah and the Shabab farms. Now, the Israelis have, as a result of this, after the Hezbollah Katyusha rocket salvoes, they heavily bombarded many of the Lebanese towns. You mentioned Aitashab. It was not just Aitashab. It was also the towns of Ramia and Al-Mashab and surrounding Aitashab was heavily bombarded. And they mentioned that they were some 40 targets, which were mostly in the outskirts of these villages. We're talking about woods. We're talking about mass green spaces, basically. But the Israelis also heavily bombarded Marun Ras and Hula this night as well.
Students in the U.S. are expanding their solidarity rallies with Gaza across the country's campuses, and the U.S. police have escalated their violence against pro-Palestine protesters, arresting hundreds of them. We discussed this issue with our guests earlier in our News Review program. And I welcome everyone up News Review program, where we get in-depth in one of the day's top stories. U.S. police have attacked pro-Palestine rallies by university students who've been protesting Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip across college campuses over the past weeks. In Texas, mounted state troopers attacked hundreds of protesters at the University of Texas, arresting at least a dozen students. Similar attacks by U.S. police were reported in California. Tent protests are also underway in other American campuses, including Yale, MIT, UC Berkeley, and the University of Michigan. At New York's Columbia University, the epicenter of expanding protests, police staged many incursions, arresting hundreds of protesters. Over 130 people were arrested at a pro-Palestinian protest at New York University Monday night. The students say they're expressing solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza amid ongoing Israeli genocide. They're calling on U.S. universities to divest from companies with ties to the Israeli regime. Students have also rejected accusations by pro-Israeli groups about spreading anti-Jew hatred. U.S. officials have threatened to deploy the National Guard to end the protests. Joining us for the program now is Tony Gosling, historian and investigative journalist from Bristol, and Sayed Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator, joining us out of London. Gentlemen, welcome both of you to the program here. Good to have both of you on. I guess, Tony, we'll start with you. Your thoughts on how this next generation in America is showing growing opposition to the Israeli regime, Tony, and not just what it is doing today in Gaza, but basically what it stands for.
Well, let me give you a picture of what's been going on here in Bristol, because I mean, I'm not totally clear about exactly what's happening in the US, but certainly here in Bristol, we've got a couple of institutions. We're very lucky to have something called a Palestine Museum here in Bristol. Very few cities in the UK have got it, but it's right in the city centre, and it's got the whole, it's open most days of the week, particularly weekends, and it's got a whole history of the British involvement in Palestine. And there are many items there people can get to grips with the history and understand what's going on. We're a very anti-racist city, so obviously it was a city which was very active in the anti-apartheid campaigns in South Africa, and has been equally so with enormous marches here on the streets in support of Palestine. But we've also got a university. Bristol University is one of the biggest universities in the country. And what we've seen there is preemptive strikes by the Israel lobby against the university to actually get rid of academics there. But the students have been occupying buildings here in Bristol, several different occupations where they go in for a few days to take over parts of the university. And the reason they're doing this is because they can see that the mass media and the politicians, the two main elite institutions, are simply supporting the genocide. And whilst they continue to do that, civil society is beginning to kick back against this government and particularly against the press. There's been graffiti, for example. We've got murals across the city which are portraying the Palestinian struggle. And so this has become a cause célèbre for cities like Bristol, which is involved for many years in this slave trade and has a very, very conscious group of young people and students. They are 100% behind the Palestinians.
Thank you, Tony. Sayed, welcome to the program. Sayed, you very well know many of these students are risking quite a bit by getting out and getting themselves involved with these protests. Some of them are suffering their first arrest as a young man or woman. Many of them are risking their admission status Even some faculty members are joining in, possibly losing their tenure at these universities. Some of these students are getting branded, you very well know, with certain kind of hate charges or whatnot, anti-Semitic charges, risking scholarships and stipends. Yet here they are being part of this movement. And this cannot be good, can it, for the Israeli regime, what these young Americans are willing to risk to get their voices heard?
Well, you see, the Zionist and Israeli Hasbara, their control of American political system, their control of the media, these are all well-known facts by those of us who are aware of what Zionism is and how powerful it is around the world and how its networks have really been able to overrun so many, especially the Western institutions, let alone talking about the East as well, which are often subsidiaries of Anglo-Zionist imperialism anyway. So what they've done with this system is they kept people ignorant. Most Americans didn't know anything about Zionism. They probably wouldn't even have known what Zionism actually even means, the definition of it. And they wouldn't have known really what Israel was up to inside their own territories also. So there's a lot of ignorance. But of course, single-handedly, Netanyahu and his government and Joe Biden and his callous support for this genocide has woken so many people up. I mean, to the point where here in Britain and over there, what you're getting is statistics. I mean, Ipsos and the Brookings Institute have given statistics, and then there are the YouGov statistics here in Britain. All of them reflect the same thing, that basically the Western public, the British public, the American public, are now around 66% to 70% against Israel in one shape or form.
Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us on the program. Stay safe. To both of you, always a pleasure to check in with you, the two of you. Sayed Mohsen Abbas there, joining us there from London, and Tony Gosling joining us out of Bristol. And this brings us to the conclusion of this segment of your news review program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now. That's it for your latest here, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
With Earth Day, which was on April 22nd, it is important to recall how Zionists developed myths relating to the Palestinian land. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Palestine Chronicle wrote, "Since October 7th, Zionists have wielded atrocity propaganda to justify genocide," Mary Terfa writes, adding, "While Palestinians have shared testimony of the atrocities they have witnessed, the difference is not just in the truth of these stories, but also their function. Defined as information about the crimes committed by an enemy, especially deliberate fabrications or exaggerations, this form of misinformation has been the topic of rebuttal since the start of the war on Gaza, actually the genocide against the Gaza people. However, Zionist Hasbro or Zionist propaganda has a long history, beginning with the Nakba or catastrophe in 1948. With the Earth Day happen on April 22nd, it is important to recall how Zionists developed myths relating to the Palestinian land. As Alan George observes, prior to 1948, the Zionists sought to justify unrestricted Jewish immigration to Palestine by claiming that it was a land without a people for a people without a land. In the Americas too, European invaders perpetrated the myth of technical superiority to exterminate the original inhabitants of the land. Reappropriating notions of manifest destiny, Zionists laid their claim to what they wrongly said was barren wasteland whose original inhabitants lacked the ability to make the desert bloom. Dina Elmuti notes, "Every Zionist accusation is a confession, a worldview that relies on lies, propaganda, and manipulation, thereby ensuring that everything that is bad is projected outward onto others." Thus, when Zina Rakhmolyova says that anti-Israel activists use Israel's Independence Day to hijack the narrative and attempt to rewrite history, she's projecting what Zionists themselves have done. It is a common myth that Palestine was once vacant land. In fact, it was once the home of a thriving agricultural economy in which Palestinians produced grains, melons, and olives, to name a few. Once Zionists razed the land for highways and homes belonging to the Zionist settlers, it was declared a military zone for Palestinians, thus reducing a once flourishing people to poverty. Co-founder and CEO of Social Light Creative reiterates the myth that when Jewish immigrants returned to their land, they encountered there a barren land that was sparsely populated with few natural resources and limited water supply. Indeed, she might have copied these words straight out of Henry Nash Smith's Virgin Land, The American West as a Myth and Symbol, 1950, a seminal American studies text that ironically falls into the trap of mythologizing the West as vacant land while at the same time pointing out the mythologies of the region that form a part of the American psyche. As the Zionist regime continues to uproot olive trees, a symbol of the rootedness of Palestinians, they are replaced by non-native pine trees, which became the quintessential symbol of Zionism. The Zionist regime's force is not only employed by violence and displacement, it is also applied through environmental damage to the land. By replacing the long-rooted olive trees with non-native, fast-growing pine trees forest, Zionists hope to sever the Palestinians' relationship to the land. Not only does this destroy the people's livelihoods and kinship with the earth, it also creates ecological devastation. Taya Amit writes, These foreign trees often cannot adapt to local soils as they demand a lot of water, causing droughts. They also acidify the land, making the ground inedible for Palestinian shepherds to graze their flocks on, and the trees are vulnerable to wildfires, creating a situation that needs to be highlighted on Earth Day. These fires, like those in other parts of the global south, are the product of colonizers who seek to impose their own imprint on the land.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the effects of training morality. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You are listening to A to Z, and we want to talk about the effects of training and nurturing and upbringing on the morality and ethical aspect of a person. Well, as all of us know, that a person develops his personality through his actions and also through ideas which one holds. So our ideas and our beliefs on one side, and our actions and our habits on other side, together make our personality and make us what we are. So that is the moral and ethical aspect of our personality, the habits we build with the passage of time, the deep-rooted traits and qualities which we have in our character, how they are developed. This is the topic of ethics. In ethics and morality, we talk about this, how the inner traits and qualities are gained, how to gain the virtue, how to gain the excellence. So, in this regard, the training plays an important role. But first, we should know that training is not the sole cause of gaining the virtue. Training is not the sole cause of gaining the excellence or avoiding the bad habits. So it is the one portion, it plays a one part in reaching the goal of gaining the excellence and virtue. So actually, what is a virtue? Well, first we should understand what are the ethics and what are the virtues which we want to gain, and what are those bad habits or bad qualities? Well, any type of a good habit or any type of excellence, any type of virtue is not just about doing good things, because one may do good things just because of his inner disposition. There is no intellection, there is no rationality behind it. So, for example, there is a person who spends money whenever that is needed. So he does this because of his disposition. He is a person, or has been grown in a family where there is he saw every people spending money a lot. So he takes this trade from them. But that is not enough for the person to gain the excellence. That is not excellence. What is excellence? When you rationalize this, when you make the child understand why he is doing and spending his money. So the good trait or a virtue is not just about an action. It's about an action that rises from rationality. Welcome back. You are listening to A to Z, and we are talking about the effect of training on morality. Well, as we talked before, that virtue or an excellence is a kind of habit which grows in light of reasoning, in light of intellection and thinking. So if you deprive a habit from this aspect, it does not remain a virtue, because it may arise from another motives. So So what role a training plays in developing excellence and good having good morality? Well, as you know, that actually every virtue is a potential. Every excellence is an inner potential. And this potential needs to be realized. It needs to be actualized. So the only role a trainer can play is to help someone gain the ability to realize his inner quality. You cannot make someone become virtuous. You cannot make someone gain excellences. It is his task. He can gain excellences by himself, by learning how to think rightly, and by learning, by practicing how to act rightly. So it depends upon his own personality. You cannot change him by forcing him. It's just training is just about helping a person to grow good habits and helping a person and guiding him to learn how to think rightly. So the training is just like you open the door and tell the person, please pave the path of perfection by your own. So actually, this all process of training is about enlightening someone by showing him the right path. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Tom Cotton, the bellicose U.S. senator from Arkansas, has voiced specific support for violence and inflicting pain on pro-Palestinian protesters. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Tom Cotton, the bellicose U.S. senator from Arkansas, is not satisfied with pushing to employ the U.S. military against Black Lives Matter and Antifa protesters. He is now encouraging vigilance violence against Gaza genocide activists. Recently, he proposed throwing protesters in American cities off bridges. He urged people stuck in traffic related to Gaza genocide protest to take violent action. He said, "I encourage people who get stuck behind the pro-Hamas mobs blocking traffic, take matters into your own hands to get them out of the way." Protesters for Palestinian freedom are pro-Hamas mobs to Qadan, a man who inveighs against overtaxing, but on the American tax day promotes bodily harm against those protesting U.S. tax money, fueling war crimes and genocide. Speaking to Fox News about protesters blocking traffic in demonstrations from California to Illinois to New York and elsewhere, Cotton said, "If something like this happened in Arkansas on a bridge there, let's just say I think there would be a lot of very vet criminals that have been tossed overboard, not by law enforcement, but by the people whose road they are blocking," unquote. Then voicing specific support for violence and inflicting pain on protesters, Cotton asserted, "If they glued their hands to a car or the pavement, well, probably pretty painful to have their skin ripped off. But I think that's the way we'd handle it in Arkansas. And I would encourage most people anywhere that get stuck behind criminals like this, who are trying to block traffic, to take matters in their own hands." Hatam Abu Daya, national chair of the U.S. Palestinian Community Network, USPCN, told to the Electronic Intifada, "It's really unbelievable in this day and age that a sitting U.S. senator can threaten violence to protesters and not be sanctioned or censured or anything else by his colleagues. It's been an incredible challenge in the past 6 months, especially to experience what Palestinians have in the U.S., that our lives are expensive, that our rights aren't defended, that our very existence is threatened. But we can't and won't back down, and we will continue fighting to stop the genocide and make sure that racist, white, supremacist apologies for Israel like Tom Cotton will see a free Palestine in his lifetime." The American Civil Liberties Union did not respond to requests from the Electronic Intifada for First Amendment analysis on how much latitude Cotton has to encourage vigilance violence against protesters. Recently, Cotton also weighed in regarding a report that the International Criminal Court could bring international arrest warrants in the relatively near future against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and other top officials for war crimes. Cotton, attempting to intimidate the court and its officials, said he was putting ICC officials on notice. He added, "If you side with Hamas and Iran and enter the political battlefield against Israel, you will be sanctioned. Get your dollars out of the U.S. now and say goodbye to ever visiting America again," he said. He's clearly worried that a fair appraisal will find the child-killing regime of Israel has committed war crimes in Gaza and with U.S. arms. Meanwhile, the House of Representatives passed a resolution deeming the chant "From the River to the Sea, Palestine will be free" to be anti-Semitic. Just 43 Democrats voted against the resolution and one Republican. Unsurprisingly, many Democrats ended up on the side of noted anti-Semite and Islamophobe Marjorie Taylor Greene, a congressional QAnon enthusiasts from the state of Georgia. The representatives aren't interested in addressing anti-Semitism with a resolution, but in restricting speech related to Palestinian freedom. Many supporters of the chant are strong supporters of equal rights for all those living between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea and oppose an apartheid regime of Israel, carrying out what the International Court of Justice has deemed a plausible genocide in Gaza. Most of the Palestinians in the coastal territory are there as a consequence of Zionist militias and the Zionist regime military dispossessing and displacing their grandparents and great-grandparents into Gaza in 1948. Many have family land that was stolen from them just a few miles away. The hypocrisy and wars of House members is clear. They had nothing to say about the Zionist regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's map presented in September 2023 at the United Nations, depicting all of the land between the river and the sea and the occupied Golan Heights as part of the fabricated regime of Israel. Yair Netanyahu, the Prime Minister's son, triumphantly claims on his Twitter, X, feed to his nearly 200,000 followers that from the river to the sea, this flag of Israel is all you will see. The apartheid vision of father and son is widely accepted or disregarded in the U.S. Congress. From co-sponsors of the River to the Sea resolution, Michael Lawler and Max Miller, on the far right to Jamie Raskin and Sheila Sherfliss McCormick, who are supposedly on the left. Miller, of course, received no censure last year for his genocidal call to turn Gaza into a parking lot. Calls for equal rights for Palestinians are now hate speech to most members of the U.S. House of Representatives. University students and activists will pay a price, but such congressional foolishness is apt to lead to even more people questioning U.S. policies opposing Palestinian freedom. More unconditioned military aid to the Zionist regime, some $17 billion approved today by the U.S. House of Representatives, with just 58 members dissenting, will only make for more Israeli regime war crimes and with deeper U.S. complicity. Roughly $9 billion in humanitarian aid for areas devastated by war was approved, including an anticipated $2 billion for Palestinians in Gaza. The New York Times confuses very few when it says this military aid comes in the context of scores of Palestinian civilian casualties. In fact, the Zionist regime's military genocidal action with the backing of U.S. arms has resulted in tens of thousands of Palestinian civilian casualties since October 7th.
true promise. This was the code name of a retaliatory military action by Iran against Israel. On Saturday, April 13th, Iran's IRGC unleashed massive aerial assaults on Israeli positions from its own soil. The widespread operation, which lasted hours, deployed over 300 drones, cruise missiles, and ballistic missiles. The strike came in response to the Israeli regime's attack on the consular building of the Islamic Republic's embassy in the Syrian capital of Damascus on April 1st. The attack came as a blatant violation of all international conventions, especially the Geneva and Vienna conventions. Seven Iranian military advisors, including several top IRGC commanders, were killed in the airstrike. Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, a commander of IRGC Quds Force, and his deputy General Mohammad Hadi Haji Rahimi were among those killed in the attack on the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Damascus. The Iranian military advisors are in Syria for more than a decade, at the official invitation of the Syrian government to help fight Takfiri groups, including Daesh terrorists, which ironically enough have never attacked Israel. This has given rise to speculations that the Israeli regime is helping terrorists to destabilize the sovereign countries in the West Asian region. The regime is already accused of supporting the terrorists in Syria. Back in 2014, a controversial video showed top Israeli officials, including Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, visiting Syrian militants wounded in the battle with government forces. Footage clearly showed how Israel was quietly cultivating ties with terrorists in Syria, providing medical care and other unidentified supplies to them. The April 1st strike by Israel targeting Iranian military advisors in Syria was not unprecedented. The regime has a long history of killing Iranian commanders, which is seen as part of its desperate attempts to undermine resistance movements in the region. Israel has also assassinated several Iranian scientists and launched sabotage attacks against Iran's nuclear facilities in recent years. Shortly after the Israeli strikes on April 1st, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, announced that the Zionist regime would pay a price. The barrage of Iranian missiles and drones targeted a large intelligence base in the occupied lands and Israel's Nevatim airspace, from where an F-35 jet took off to target Iran's diplomatic premises in Damascus on April 1st. The Iranian strike on Israel sparked celebrations not only in Iranian cities, but also in other countries, including Yemen, Lebanon, and especially Palestine and Gaza, where Israel has already carried out a genocide resulting in the deaths of more than 32,000 people. In the West Bank city of Jenin, Palestinians expressed gratitude for Iran's attack. The strike has resonated deeply with those who have long endured Israeli aggression and oppression, offering a glimmer of hope and solidarity in their struggle for justice and freedom. Although the Israeli regime asserted that it successfully intercepted most of the missiles and drones, informed sources reveal a different narrative. The Israeli regime and its allies reportedly faltered in intercepting any of the hypersonic missiles launched by Iran, resulting in the damage to Israeli military bases across the occupied territories. Major General Mohammad Bagheri, Chief of Staff of the Iranian Armed Forces, affirmed that the strikes achieved their objectives, highlighting the failure of the Israeli regime's Iron Dome system to effectively counter Iranian missiles and drones.
Well, it's obvious that it was a major humiliation for the Israeli regime. They crossed the red line and they got punished for it. Of course, the Israelis can say 110% of the drones and missiles were downed. That's fine, but they can also take journalists to see the bases that the Iranians have said were severely damaged. They can easily do that today or tomorrow.
Iran's retaliatory strike, while significant, is viewed as just the initial step. analysts emphasize that the strike, although impactful, represents only a fraction of Iran's potential response capabilities. They warn that if the Israeli regime decides to escalate the conflict further by launching an attack on Iran, the retaliation from Iran is likely to be exponentially more severe. This initial action is regarded as a strategic signal of Iran's preparedness to defend itself and its interests, setting the stage for potential future confrontations with Israel. Back in 2013, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, warned the Israeli officials against threatening the Islamic Republic. He said any military invasion by the regime against Iran would result in destruction of Tel Aviv and Haifa. Now, Iranian officials are issuing a solemn warning, emphasizing that the retaliatory measures taken against Israel on April 13th, carried out within the confines of self-defense, signify a pivotal moment in Iran's strategic approach. This significant action marks the culmination of Iran's era, characterized by strategic patience, suggesting a shift in the nation's stance towards safeguarding its interests and responding decisively to perceived threats. According to Iranian President's Deputy Chief of Staff for Political Affairs, Mohammad Jamshidi, Iran's retaliatory strikes on the Israeli-occupied territories signified the end of the strategic patience era. Iran's vow to punish Israel for its actions underscores the seriousness of the situation and the depth of Iran's commitment to defending its sovereignty and deterring further Israeli aggression. The strike serves as a warning to Israel that any future provocations will be met with swift and severe consequences.
Iran has more advanced drones and missiles, and the very fact that the Americans don't want to be a part of any Israeli counter-response shows that the Americans know where the power lies. So the smart thing for the Israeli regime to do would be to refrain from responding. They got their punishment and they should live with it. They can say that 200% of the drones were down and 300% of the missiles were down, but as long as they keep quiet, they'll be safe. But if they strike Iran again, it's going to get much worse.
Tehran's assertion of its readiness to defend itself against external threats underscores its determination to maintain stability and security in the region. Some analysts view Iran's unprecedented attack on Israel as a calculated move aimed at maintaining a balance of power in the region and preventing further destabilization to deter Israeli aggression and bolster Iran's deterrence capabilities.
This was, I call it, one of the greatest military demonstrations in modern history, because by doing what they did, Iran not only put Israel into check, but believe it or not, they have created a foundation for peace and stability in the Middle East by eliminating from consideration options that Israel and the United States may have been considering down the road, such as a preemptive strike against Iranian nuclear facilities.
Operation True Promise was Iran's first direct military action against Israel. It was a limited operation, a slap in the face of the regime. The next operation, if necessary, will be totally different.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
the limelight.
A new opinion poll says the majority of the American people support blocking arms shipments to Israel until the current campaign of death and destruction by the Israeli occupying regime ends. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The American newspaper The New York Times has reported on the story and tells us more. The U.S. House of Representatives has passed a whopping $95 billion so-called aid package aimed at the Israeli regime, Ukraine, and the Chinese Taipei, amid warnings about further contribution by Washington to global crises. The bills, passed in a rare Saturday 20th of April session, were approved in quick succession by overwhelming bipartisan votes. They provide $26 billion for the Israeli regime, which has been engaged in a genocidal war in the Gaza Strip since October of last year. The war launched following the Al-Aqsa Storm operation, a retaliatory operation by Gaza's resistance movements, has so far massacred tens of thousands of innocent Palestinians, many of them women and children. The draft legislation also sent $60.8 billion to Ukraine, including $23 billion to replenish U.S. weaponry, stocks and facilities amid Kiev's ongoing engagement in a deadly years-long war with neighboring Russia. Russia says the latest aid package by the United States for Ukraine will fail to change the military situation on the ground. At a press conference on Thursday, 18th of April, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov stressed that the $61 billion package of U.S. funding for Ukraine would not change the dynamics on the battlefield. Dmitry Peskov said, "It won't in any way influence the development of the situation on the front lines. All experts now assert that the situation on the front is very unfavorable for the Ukrainian side. Therefore, it will not be able to change anything." Lastly, the bills allocate $8.12 billion for the Indo-Pacific region, including the Chinese Taipei, despite China's ongoing warnings against US's meddlesome policies towards the territory over which Beijing enjoys sovereignty. The US Senate could take the bills up as early as next Tuesday, 23rd of April. Senate approval would then send the measures to President Joe Biden for his signature. The passage of the bills has been closely followed by U.S. military contractors, which are in line with for huge contracts to supply hardware to Ukraine and to America's other allies. President Biden welcomed the votes, claiming they would deliver critical support to Israel and to Ukraine and bolster security and stability in the Indo-Pacific region. Also on Saturday, 20th of April, however, Russia's Foreign Ministry spokeswoman, Maria Zakharova, said the allocation of U.S. military aid to Ukraine, Israel and the Chinese Taipei will exacerbate the global crises. Zakharova said support for Israel represents a direct path to an unprecedented worsening of the situation in the Middle East region. Maria Zakharova called aid for Kiev direct support for terrorist activities and said aid to Taipei represents interference in China's internal affairs. The Common Dreams website has also covered the same story. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has reportedly been failing to act on a proposal from a special panel at his department to suspend assistance to Israeli military over human rights violations against Palestinians. Citing several current and former American officials, the New York-based ProPublica news site reported on Wednesday, 17th of April, that a special committee of the State Department known as the Israel-Lehi Vetting Forum had rec-